Ruchem Aboyim, welcome to the fourth in the continuing series of lectures on the Yudgimel Midrash HaTorah Nedrashet Bahem, on the 13 hermeneutic principles which of exegesis, which the sages have used in order to extract and to interpret the written Torah. At the end of last week's lecture, I mentioned the Greek dimension and aspect to the Yud Gimel Middas, and I wanted to discuss that in detail. And the reason I'm actually bringing it up, because this has been the subject of a certain amount of scholarly research, and I think that any series of Shi'urim and Yud Gimel Middas certainly has to address this to any either intelligent or informed audience, as I assume that's whom I'm addressing. The two articles, which I might have mentioned at the end of week's lecture, is one article which was written, I believe, it appeared in 1940 by the distinguished, classical scholar or scholar of ancient law, David Dalby, who I think obviously was Jewish. He was a Yekke, he was a German. And it appears in the HUCA Journal, 22, 1940. And it's entitled Rabbinic Methods of Interpretation in Hellenistic Rhetoric. And there, Professor Dalby notes a very, very strong similarity between the Yud Gimel Middas and the and Greek theories of rhetoric, of interpretation of texts. And I think it's even... at the beginning of the article, he wants to seem to make the claim that, in fact, that the Yud Gimel Middas Chas V'Shalom, God forbid, that's my insertion, were derived from the Greek methods of rhetoric. At the end of the article, he wants to say that these were things that were in the air. This was the type of learning that was being done by intellectuals at the time. And there's no doubt that Hillel was, under this type of, of Hellenistic influence, and therefore the Yud Gimel Middas are none other than the Jewish version of Hellenistic rhetoric. An article...
Hellenistic here, you mean Greek and...
Greek, right. Yeah, Hellenism, right. Yavon. Now, otherwise known as Yavon. Now, there's an article, I know I say, I'm not sure exactly when the article was published, but in... Professor Saul Lieberman, also in his book on, in Hellenism and Palestine, I forget the name of the book, it's a collection of articles, also has an article, and there too, he actually quotes Dalby, so he wasn't the first one to say this, but there too he notes, in fact, actually the similarity and the parallelism between what appears in Hellenistic theories of rhetoric and interpretation, and in the Yud Gimel Middas, and the article is devoted to that, and of course he invokes a bit of his depth of breadth and breadth of the Kiyas and Chazal, and showing of course there he doesn't want to say that he says explicitly, he doesn't want to say like Chas V'Shalom that Hillel derived these things, but he just says that there's an interesting parallel. Actually, the person that he actually quotes is actually a Karaite, a Karoi. He quotes a Yehuda Hadassi, who was a Karoi, and it's in the sefer called Eshkol HaKofer Kufchov Dalad Beis. It's in the if you look at I have the Lieberman article actually translated into Hebrew, Lashon HaKodesh. And there it appears on 190, page 190. And so actually it's very, very good and happy. And so this Karoi accuses the Chazal of taking the Yud Gimel Middas from the Greeks. So it's good. That's dookie. In other words, they were hitting below the belt. And as we saw last week, that the Stukim, that Karoi is looking at two different things. But just like the Stukim were against the Yud Gimel Middas, so here this... this Karoi is actually being a bit of a kanoi, and he's claiming that Chazal were like a little bit too enlightened, and they'd actually gotten some of their, the Yud Gimel Middas from the Greek methods of interpretation of scripture. So Lieberman continues on this and says that actually we're in a position right now to verify what this guy said, et cetera, et cetera. And that's his position. I want to go through the entire article. Those of you interested, you could look at it. If not, you just hear the shield and we'll try to summarize some of the arguments. First of all, I don't know Greek, but on the other hand, though, I mean, I think Dodovid Ligluya, I mean, it's clear from the quotes that are being quoted. Of course, the quotes that I, in this article, are either in Latin or Greek. I'm not really conversant in either ones, but, let's assume that the quotes are verbatim or precise, exact. So therefore, in other words, there's no doubt, right, there's no doubt from here that we see that there must have been methods of rhetoric of Greek, which bears some type of resemblance to the Gimel Midas. Delby goes through all of them, and so does Lieberman, but I want to barely focus on a few of them. Actually, up till now, of course, in Nishu'im, we've been speaking about the Gzer Shava, and a little bit the Kal V'chomer, mostly Gzer Shava, but we'll speak about Kal V'chomer too, because Kal V'chomer, Gzer Shava, and Yanav are actually included more or less in the as the first three middas, so it's more or less the same, as opposed to klal of pat to klal, etc. First of all, the fact that we see things in Chazal, which appear in Greek philosophy, Greek rhetoric, is not we shouldn't look at that as, chas v'shalom being a contradiction to anything. And I want to speak a little bit about Reb Tzadik. Reb Tzadik HaKohen actually speaks about this. Reb Tzadik HaKohen, in several places, in several places in his writings, notes the fact that there is a concept called Zulu Mazu. He speaks about this in Brit Tzadik. He speaks about this in many of his Sfarim. You'll see, say, Laila. There are numerous, the places are so numerous where he speaks about it, I don't even have to quote all of them, but whoever is in any way familiar with Reb Tzadik's philosophy and his very deep understanding of these issues understands. And to be a davar pashut, that with every change in paradigm, there's also somehow an equivalent change in paradigm with regard to the umasol and the nations of the world. So, for example, the tzaddik in Tzidkas HaTzaddik, for example, in Simen Tzaddik, famous Reb Tzaddik, and where he speaks about that there's a commensurability between Chachmas HaTeira and the Chachmas Ubel Oilem, Tzitzkas HaTzadik, Simen Tzadik. And actually, later on in Tzitzkas HaTzadik, I think it's in Simen Reish Memtes, there Reb Tzadik speaks about that actually part of the purpose of Golus, speaks about Avraham Avinu going to Mitzrayim, he's going to take all the Kesev Vezov, and there Reb Tzadik actually, and tremendous arichas with many, many rayas and proofs, wants to show that one of the purposes of Golas of exile is that there are bits and pieces of chokhmah of wisdom which are dispersed and remain captured in the exile in the different nations. And the purpose of exile, a purpose of exile and therefore redemption, is somehow to recover these aspects of chokhmah that in fact are, that exist in these places, and to bring them back into Torah, into Kedusha. Reb Tzadik elaborates on that. In fact, actually, in Takanas HaShavim, I'm on Reb Tzadik has probably come out in a new edition, but on Daf Lamed Dalet, I guess I would call it Lamed Dalet with base, second column, or page 67. There Reb Tzadik actually speaks about that part of the chait, and well, the consequences of the chait of Eitz Hadas, of the tree of knowledge of Eitz Hadas, of knowledge of Teva Ra, is that there is the dispersion of elements of Teira among the, among the nations, and part of the tikkun, and part of really actually the purpose of the tikkun, which is actually affected through Teira Shemial Peh, right? Through Teira Shemial Peh, is really in fact recovering these elements of Torah which have been scattered among the nations, and this it goes into detail. And of course, this is a Shoni Gimel Midas, is not a drasha, it's not a drasha. This is a Shoni Gimel Shia, but Reb Tzadik does explain that in fact actually that's part of Teresh Be'al Peh, to recover these elements of Das, of Chachma, which become dispersed as a consequence of the Chet of Eitz Das. The only reason I'm bringing this is not in other words, is to show that in fact that the fact that we might see things in Chazal that bear resemblance to Greek concepts is not something that we should, you know, that should unnerve us. On the contrary, it's really, in other words, I mean, I don't think Abtzadik was a classical scholar on the level of Professor Dalby, but just from his, you know, his Bekiyas B'chalatecha Kula, Abtzadik, in fact, understands this to be a Yisai, that he, you know, a fundamental idea, that in fact, actually, we will see, you know, throughout Jewish history, what we would think to be elements of what we call, quote-unquote, foreign thought, you know, which are somehow bear resemblance or bear commensurability to elements of the Torah too. I might add, you know, Avdecha HaNe'eman, your faithful servant, that in fact at the end of, I looked in a, I see that, I don't know if somebody brings this, I looked in a, you have a question? But I looked in a, I looked actually in a, you know, in English, in Abtzadik, I see it doesn't mean this Maror Makkah, but the most famous Maror Makkah thing about this is actually at the end of Seder Ilim Rabbah, it says that when Alexander Makdon comes to Yerushalayim, it says, Adkan is Nabu Anaviyim, Mikan Ve'ele, Chatishma Divach HaChamim. And there we see clearly that the Seder Ilim Rabbah is somehow, is, in other words, is making a connection between the cessation of prophecy and the commandments of Nevuah, which I guess begins with Rav Shimon HaTzadik, but in other words, certainly Hillel and Shammai not much after that, and the meeting of cultures between the Torah and between Greek cultures. In other words, clearly the Sefer HaMirabah is making this type of a parallel.
Could be the Tzidkas HaTzadik is chaylik on that because he holds its Purim, that is Kiblu, which is the end of
Chayim. Right. In other words, I'm just bringing two memories with Tzidkas HaTzadik. There's a whole Arichas in this in different places and everything with this Purim. All I want to bring out is that, in other words, the notion of parallelism, commensurability between the Chachma Satera and what we call Chachmas Yavan is not something which you know which is Shakas, but actually it's a part. It's Chazals. It's Chazals which Abtzadik interprets accordingly.
Can I ask? Is there any kiddush in the concept of Kal Vachomer? Doesn't every system of human logic that's ever existed subscribe to a concept of Kal Vachomer?
So the fact is that Dalby actually speaks about this. He says that he speaks in a Chinami, right? But Kal Vachomer is not such an abstract thing. That you should think that you need a chiddush of the Greeks, but the fact is, he makes note that in different classical works, the order of the principles follows the order that we see in the Yud Gimel Midas. In other words, Kal Vachomer comes from Gezeirah Shavah. In other words, he makes a to do it. I don't. He admits the fact that this could be possibly true. But in any case, I wanted to address actually these issues, and with due respect both to Professor Dalby and to Shaul Lieberman, I think that they're grossly mistaken in their analysis, and that's what I want to speak about this evening. Dalby, for example, it's interesting, quotes on page 251, I don't expect you to have the article in front of you, but in any case, in 251, he speaks about a Kal Vachomer. I'm quoting again, the first of these norms is the inference is the a fortiori or a minari ad meus in Hebrew Kal Vachomer, the light in the waiting. He gives an example, and he says, rhetorical parallels abound, and he quotes Cicero, I guess this is the historian Cicero, one applies to the meus must also apply to the minus, and vice versa. I guess that's a Kal Vachomer. And there he's actually dividing Kal Vachomer into two things, going from the Kal to the Chomer, the Chomer to the Kal. Again, what applies to one thing was applied to that, which is equal. And that's actually, he's identifying with a Gzeira Shavah. In other words, he's putting Kal Vachomer together with Gzeira Shavah. And I see here in the footnote, on footnote number 43, he says, the writer refrains from being more explicit about Hitler's second, third, and fourth norms, because they are Original nature and history has not so far been appreciated, but it would lead to a far field here to go into them. For a certain aspect of the second, Zera Shava, see above. Basically, Adabi doesn't even go into it. He just assumes, you know, he finds like, you know, he finds a reference and that's it. But actually, I think it's here where actually Dalby's analysis fails and fails very, very significantly. First of all, he says, I'm not going to go into, but what are the other things? I mean, he's speaking out here about Kal Vachomer, but of course, there's Gzeira Shava, which he doesn't really go into that much. And then after that, of course, there's Binyanav, Binyanav Mishnei Kesuvim, because of Echeb, right? In other words, in Hillel. Now, the important thing which I want to relate to is, which is important here, is that the assumption here, and also Lieberman actually too, on page in Hebrew edition, on page 191, also speaks about, he brings a Kal Vachomer, he actually brings the same quote, but not from Cicero, but from someone called Hermogenes. I don't know, I'm not, those of you who know classics do not, you know, excuse this, abaratsus. But there, also, he brings like a very similar quote from this person. And in fact, actually there, he actually tries to define what a Gzeira Shava is. And it's actually an equation, right? B'shnei Munachim Yachad. In other words, actually, the concept of to Lieberman, of a Gzeira Shava is just really an equation of two things, which actually for us would actually, in fact, be in Hekesh. And actually, Lieberman's assertion is that the Lashon of the Tosefta, which speaks about that Hillel was making Gzeira Shava, was really actually a later Lashon. Really, the Gzeira Shava was really a Hekesh of two things together, and that's what a Gzeira Shava is. In fact, actually, he defines a Gzeira Shava, he says Gzeira Shava has nothing to do with two words. I mean, with all due respect, that's what he wants to say. He mentions one place that they look for two words in common, but really the point of Gzeira Shava is equating two concepts, which is, in fact, actually what we call the Hekesh. And that's really what Gzeira Shava is. Now, I think that we have a little bit of a misunderstanding, and I want to explain what this means.
That is according to Lieberman?
According to Lieberman. That's right. Lieberman saying. No, well, that's what Lieberman saying. In fact, I think it even is, I don't know if it was his colleague, his distinguished colleague at the JTS, having Leza Finkelstein, and his Hagdama to his additional Teres Kahanim, also makes a point that really Gzeira Shava is really, in fact, an equation of two things, and that's like a later Lashon Chazal, et cetera, et cetera. Whatever, I guess, again, you can't get things to work out, because I'll use the wrong Lashon. You try to basically say that they use different Lashonis at different periods. In scholarship, that's a very, very frequent ploy. But I want to claim that these two scholars, and I'm saying this with, of course, great humility, that these two scholars have gotten it absolutely totally wrong. And let me explain to you why I feel they've gotten it totally wrong. First of all, a Gzeira Shava, as we explained, is not a hekesh. It's not an equation of two things. In other words, a Gzeira Shava might originate, originates in a hekesh. We've spoken about this in the last few shiurim. But the actual Gzeira Shava, right, is more than an equation between two things. It's actually two words, and as we spoke about in detail in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, I mean, this is throughout Shas, but I use the Gemara Shava as a prime example, that the Gzeira Shava goes beyond the notion of logical equation. That's very, very important. In other words, a Hekesh gives us a logical equation, but Gzeira Shava is what I would call a linguistic identity. And that's, in my opinion, I mean, look, I'm not a classical scholar, I apologize, but after having read these articles thoroughly several times, I did not get the impression that Greek rhetoric in any way, right, speaks or considers as a postulate or as an idea, you know, taking two words and creating an identity. And that's an important thing. Now, from this, I want to go a little further and explain to you what I think is the misunderstanding here among the scholars, and I think we could really even, you know, it says Dama, the Bible says, and some, you know, says Dama la havishak l'mal teira v'dama la hashem l'apikaitas. In other words, sometimes when we answer the apikaitas, we have to look a little bit deeper into what Chazal is saying, and sometimes it can, you know, enlighten us. But the fact is, is that the Greeks themselves might have had standards of principles of rhetoric, but they're logical principles. A kal v'chomer is not a kal v'chomer, I mean, a gzeger shavet in and of itself is not a logical principle. It might be generated, as I said, more by a logical principle, but it's a linguistic identity of two things. Now, it is true that they speak about kal v'chomer. He speaks about a far tuori or a minori et maius, my pronunciation of the Latin. But the fact is that I think there's a misunderstanding of what the midas are. In Mirtz Hashem, I'm not going to go into this in this shia, but to give you coming attractions, the relationship between a hekesh and a gzera shava parallels the relationship between a kal v'chomer and a binyan av. In other words, if we look at the middas are actually a text which presents to us a spectrum and or dialectic between logical principles and between, I would call it, scriptural, linguistic linguistic identities or linguistic objects. In other words, just like the kal v'chomer, which is a logical principle, most of the time, I haven't taken that survey, but certainly much of the time, in Chazal, ends up being a binyan av. And a binyan av is in fact not a really purely logical principle. A binyan av, even though you can make a pircha on a kal v'chomer, it's much more difficult to make a pircha on a binyan av. So, in other words, in the same way too, we have a relationship between a hekesh and a hekesh and a gzera shava. The hekesh is a logical principle. The gzera shava is not a logical principle. Okay? Yeah.
Rav Trivet said in previous shirim that the hekesh came as a kabbalah from the previous.
We'll get to this once. We're going to get to this.
Wait.
It's getting more. Wait. In those cases that we saw, the hekesh did come as a principle for that. But we're going to see a little more. The Gzeira Shava goes beyond the Hekesh.
I'm asking, maybe Rav Trivet's going to deal with this, is if the Gzeira Shava is not based in logic and itself doesn't come as a Kabbalah but is a development from a Kabbalah.
Well, we do say Adam Dan Gzeira Shava Li Atzmai, but that's for sure.
So did they get the Gzeira Shava as a Kabbalah or didn't they?
No, the Hekesh is a Kabbalah from which they create the text of the Gzeira Shava.
So how did they create the Gzeira Shava?
Well,
if it's not logical.
What?
If it's not logical,
well,
that's not a Kabbalah, how did they create it?
Well, the Gzeira Shava, I'm not sure what your question is. I mean, you want to know all the details? I don't know the principle, the details, how they created it. But I'm saying, the point of Gzeira Shava is that, I think that's the wrong question, how they created it. I can't tell you how they created it, but the fact is we know from this Gemara Rosh Hashanah that the Gzeira Shava is something more than a logical principle, because it's an identity of two things. That's what we're speaking about, that we hear what we spoke at the Rif for. In other words, it's an identity of two things. I mean, we'll see in a little while where the Gzeira Shava comes from. What I'm saying my point is that Gzeira Shava is not a logical principle. It's based upon a hekesh, an equation of two things, but it's two words which create an identity. But what I wanted to do is explain this in the following way. Derech Agav, this concept of the Midas, or the Yugil Midas, as even Hill's Midas, but Yugil Midas, as basically consisting of the what you would call the logical dimension and the linguistic dimension. It's interesting, is that, I mean, you'll excuse me for 5 minutes, I'm going to make a little bit of a drasha. It says in Masechta Seferim that when they translate the Torah into Greek, into Yavanis, when they translate it into Greek, so the second statement says, Kasha Hayom, it was difficult today, Shinitna Egel, the Egel was given, that the golden calf was given. What is translating the Torah to do with the Chet Egel? But if you follow the thoughts of the Beis Halevi, both in the Drasha and the Shul Beis Halevi, and I think it's Beis Halevi LaTorah, then in fact, as a result of the chet of the Egel Azov, there was a bifurcation between the Torah Shemir Atel and Torah Shemir Chsav. So too, I think what happened is that as a result of the, I don't know, as a result of the influence of Greece, but somehow at that time, you have over here a type of bifurcation between what you call logical principles and linguistic principles. And both of these are actually midas, but these principles actually act, sometimes one generates the other, but sometimes they can act a little bit in dialectical opposition. And that's the point that I want to make. Now, the point I want to make is a Gemara in Mem Aleph of Beis and Gittin. The Gemara there, in Mem Aleph of Beis and Gittin, the Gemara there is speaking about, is it possible to free half a slave? The Gemara says, Tana Rabbah Meshach Chatzi Avdoi. Can you free half a slave? So there's a machlokes between Rebbe and Chachamim. Rebbe is Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi, Rebbe Judah the Prince, the Mechap of the Mishnah, and Chachamim. So Rebbe says, Koina. In other words, you could free half a slave. Chachamim loy koina. Chachamim said, no, doesn't work. So comes Rabba, Omer Rabba, right? And Amor, comes Rabba. Machlekes b'shtar. Machlekes if you do it with shtar. In other words, everybody agrees that if you do it with kesef, because you can do it with a shtar. The Rebbe Sava, the Rebbe says, is a pasuk in Vayikra, v'hafta loyim diftasa, oy chupasa loy nosan lo. So Rebbe says, maki shtar le kesef. Rebbe makes a hekesh between shtar and kesef. Ma kesef, ben kula ben chetzio. Just like kesef, you could, you know, you could free all of it or half of it. You could do anything with money. Av shtar nami ben kula ben chetzio. Also to a shtar, you can free half a slave with a shtar. Rabbanan gamiri, la la mishma. Rabbanan says, no, we have a gzera shava from Isha. Right? Because it says, o chubas alo notan nitan la, mi Isha. Ma I Isha, chetzio lo. Just if you came to Kaddish, half of an Isha. You should all know that from the first parak of Kiddusha. I think most of you should get to that. So then they take this, right? Av evid nami chetzio lo. Okay? In other words, so just like you have this gzera shava, that you came to Kaddish half an Isha, you came to Shacha half an Evid, okay? But everybody have a doubt. Lema Baha Kamiflake. Now, what's the Machlekes? Interesting Machlekes. It's very interesting. Rebbe is using a Hekesh. Rebbe is using a Hekesh, and Chachamim are using a Gzeira Shava. So, you got it. What's the Machlekes? What's stronger, a Hekesh or a Gzeira Shava? Very good. Ma'asava hekesha adifa. What opinion holds? A hekesh is stronger. Uma'asava gzereshava adifa. And what opinion says a gzereshava is stronger? Very interesting. So then the Gemara says, no, lo de kula alma gzereshava adifa. Everyone holds gzereshava adifa, and here it's different because there's a pilcha on the gzereshava. Now, I don't want to go into the entire sugi. The entire sugi here is very complicated because actually there's actually a taisfis in, there's actually a taisfis in. In Zvachadav and Ches, which I'm not going to go into now, and there's also a long Gemara in Chesed of Chavez. But the interesting is here, in other words, I have a Gzera Shava, but according to what opinion is a Pircha the Gzera Shava. Now, first of all, what is the Machlokes? So I noticed that there's a bit of a dispute. Actually, I'm going to read first from Rabbeinu Kreskas, published by Mosad Hav Kook. Okay, because the Gemara says there, here there's a pilcha on a gzera shava. Okay, so I'm Masad Rav Kook. Masad Rav Kook actually doesn't go by pages, it goes by columns, so it's column Shin Samach Beis. Okay, it's almost equal to the days of the solar year. And Gemara, but the shiny hacha the ikah and the mifrach. Mifrach means we can make a pilcha on the gzera shava. The Gemara's pilcha, I should really read that pilcha. The Gemara says, "Mali Isha Shekain Eni Yis Bekesef Toim Eved Sheitz Bekesef." Now the woman doesn't go out with money, but the Eved goes out with money. That's the Pilcha on the Gzera Shava. So, right? So the Rabbeinu Kreskas asks the question: V'Kashalach Imkain Mai Tami D'Rabbana? I mean, if it's the Pilcha, so what's, you know, why Chachamim saying? In other words, if in fact actually this is a pircha, so why is it making a gzera shava? So says the Bet Kleskas, v'yesh loyma, right? The vatikul alma gemiri, there was everybody, or gemiri, well actually, on the bottom he says v'savri, everybody learns that there's a gzera shava. Everybody's a gzera shava. Ah, you can be mafik the gzera shava, right? Gzera shava kushne is still a true gzera shava. That's the chavu. In other words, even though I can be mafik gzera shava, it's still like gzera shava still holds. Ah, that's chachamim. Now what about Rebbe? Obviously, Rebbe doesn't hold like this. So says a little kreskas. Elo the Rebbe shava that came in the ika pilcha, the gabi high dinner. The Rebbe says no. Since this is the piyucha, respect to this din, the piyucha is that a woman is not Yisrael Kesef, but Yisrael Kesef. V'ikan am hekesha, and we have a hekesh, between Shtar and Kesef. Haidina lo gemira minei hekesha odif. So because of this, we don't learn the Gzeh of Shabbat, because the hekesh is stronger. Right? And Rabban and Sabi, the Kevin, the Islam, the Gzeh of Shabbat, the Gamma Gamil, the Choldov. Now, very interesting, what's going on here? What is this thing? I'm a Gzeh Shava, I have a Pircha, not a Pircha. A Gzeh Shava doesn't have a Pircha. Even though actually, we'll see Mitzvah Hashem in a few Shiurim from now, that's actually much more complicated. Because actually, when the Ritva learns it, and Bashan Rashi too, is that the Chafak Beis, there could be Mufa Mitzvah Echa, Mishnei Stadim. I don't want to go into this as an entire Sukkah, but what am I taking this example? Let's try to analyze what's going on over here. If I have a Gzeh Shava, why might I think there's a Pircha on a Gzeh Shava? I mean, what are we saying? I mean, we're beyond that. What is your pircha? Is a pircha on a hekesh? On a hekesh, you can ask a pircha. A hekesh is a logical principle. A gzera shava, assuming that we learn the gzera shava, it's not a logical principle. There's no pircha. I don't want to go into mufa mishal echa, mufa shnei stadim. He doesn't make that chiluk over here. The point is the following point. The point is, I think here we have this yisai. Remember, there's a machlokes. The point is over here, a gzera shava certainly is generated by a hekesh. That we all agree to. At least I think I've established that, and I'm not chozer from it. It certainly stands on a hekesh. The question is, right, how strong does that hekesh have to produce the gzera shava? In other words, the hekesh that Hillel made, which produced the gzera shava, was obviously a very strong hekesh. No, there was no pircha of the gzera shava. In fact, when they said to him, you know, they said, a person, you know, you're done this, right? But here, the hekesh is not quite as strong. There's a pircha really on the hekesh. In other words, what I understand is that when I'm going from the hekesh to the gzera shava, right? But Hillel's saying, but the hekesh here, the logical principle, right, is not so strong. In other words, there must have been a machlokes. In other words, so what we have is the following thing. The following is, the hekesh, one could ask a certain pircha on this hekesh. But the Bnei Kesk is not saying, see, this is a machloikas in using the rules. It's not a machloikas on the hekesh. The question is, according to Chachamim, when I go from a hekesh to a gzeh shava, I can't ask a pech anymore than a gzeh shava. That's exactly what a gzeh shava does. What a gzeh shava does, it takes me from a logical principle to a linguistic principle, a linguistic identity. So there's no pircha on it anymore. But according to Rebbe, right, you can't go from a hekesh to a gezera shava. If in fact, actually, there's a pircha on it, and if I have an alternative to the gezera shava, another hekesh, then I do. Now, what's the point of this gemara? What is the machlokes telling us? What it's telling us is that even when we go, and this is addressing your point, even when I go from the hekesh to gzeh shava, it's not absolutely like the point of no return.
It is for the chachamim.
No, but not for Rebbe. We see the machlokes on that. In other words, the point is that when I create this gzeh shava, there's obviously a dispute between Rebbe and chachamim. What are the criterion? What are the hekesh criteria or logical criterion which allow me to establish this gzeh shava? According to Rebbe, if I can be mafid because I can shove the hekesh and I have an alternative hekesh, I don't cross the line to the gzera shava. Because once I'm at the gzera shava, there's a point of no return. I can't be mafid gzera shava anymore. Gzera shava applies. That's what Democritus is saying. Now, what I brought this example is showing is that I think that Professor Denby and Professor Liebman got it wrong. Because this Machloikus and Rebbe Chachamim could never have existed in the rhetoric of Cicero or the rhetoric of Diogenes, I don't know whoever his name is. It couldn't have existed. Because the Greeks begin and end with logical principles. Even though a Mida has a logical dimension to it, in other words, it's based upon a logical dimension, there's a type of there's a crossover or a dialectic or transition from the logical principle to the linguistic principle, which in and of itself, therefore, is somehow inoculated, you know, from logic, from any logical critique. There is a dispute as to what that relationship is. But the fact is that the Yud Gimel Midas are not logical principles. The Yud Gimel Midas, in my humble opinion, are a text which creates a dialectic between logical principles and linguistical principles. In other words, if I could even quote Reb Tzadik again, Reb Tzadik says somewhere else that Chachmi Avonis is the Chitzonius of Torah. He might be speaking about a Kabbalah there, I don't know, whatever it is. It's Chitzonius of Torah. In other words, it might be that when the Torah, that after the time of prophecy, after the time of the Vuah, when now the Torah clearly somehow bifurcates, in a certain sense the way it did after Chayta Egel, when the Torah bifurcates between clearly defined logical principles and linguistic principles, right? Then, in other words, it might be that the logical principles, which now are represent principles in and of themselves, might bear resemblance to Greek, you know, logical principles of rhetoric. But that's not the Mida. The Mida is the collusion. The Mida is the interaction or the dialectic between the logical principle and between the scriptural identity. So in other words, I reject both these articles. I don't think that a Zecha Shavah is a Zecha Shavah. It's not a logical principle. It might be generated by a logical principle. That's the beginning. But the end of it is a Zecha Shavah. And the Zecha Shavah is more than a logical principle. And the path, the logical path from a Hekesh, from the, you know, the logical equation to the linguistic identity is a path which is rather complex. As we see, is subject in several cases to what we see a machlokes dispute among Tanaim, Rabbi Chachamim. Now, in other words, now the question is, you ask how they put together the Gzeira Shavah. So, in other words, what we spoke about the last few shulim is that what happens is we have here the creation of a text, meaning that what? Meaning, and I spoke about this, that clearly with the Aridas Hadeiras, right? In other words, different types of Svaras and Hekeshim, right? At this point in history, when I spoke about it, were not enough, because it could possibly be with the intrusion of Hellenism. So because of that, you know, you could take logical principles and totally unwind them. So there's a freezing process. The freezing process, right, is called the Gezeira Shavah. But what are freezing things or thawing things has principles, has rules. In other words, what do I freeze, what don't I freeze? Or for example, do I freeze all way? Do I freeze halfway? We're going to see in Yetz Hashem a Gemara in, I think it's in Zvachim, where basically Rabbi Akiva dashens half of a Gezeira Shavah, and the rest of that is a Hekesh. So I don't know, what is that called, freezing? Is that called, you know, making it cold? Or thawing it out? I'm not sure what it's called. In other words, clearly there's a freezing process that's going on. And it could possibly be that this is, in other words, I'm not saying, you know, I mean, you know, people get mad when you say, well, the Greeks caused this. But I'm saying is, the fact is that in the Aridas Hadeiras, where so much is subjected to, you know, logical critique and, you know, logical critique, which can undermine the foundations of the Torah, the thawing process is a type of a new giloy, revelation of Torah, like Kabtzotik says over and over again. And this is this freezing process. But the point I wanted to make is that the confusion of Dalby and Lieberman is that the Yud Gimel Midas are not logical principles. They have a each of them, or the whole group of them, has a aspect, has a dimension, which is logical, but it's a midah is a two-dimensional object. One end is logical, or one axis is logical, one axis is linguistic, and the midahs are basically two-dimensional graphs on this two-dimensional surface, on this Cartesian coordinate system, and the different tanayim draw different curves. One draws a square, one draws a circle, I'm being extremely geometric, but that's really what's going on. So I don't want to say these two articles are trash, but the fact is, because actually, after reading the articles, we actually come to appreciate what the Yigim Midas are. But the fact is, the Yigim Midas are very, very Jewish. They're very Yiddish. They have no, in my opinion, the fact that coincidentally, the logical component, right, Meshlon's Greek rhetoric, doesn't tell me anything about how they're used. They're used in a totally different way. Put it this way. The Greek component, if you want to call it that, I'm not even sure that's even true, but the Greek component, if you want to call it that, is actually just a one-dimensional part of a multidimensional field, which according to the Tzaddik, that's called the Chitzayni, it's like a Gedaushin, the words of the Tzaddik, it's the klipa of it, it's not the main thing. The main thing is this interaction. Now actually, as we're going to see in Mitzvah Shem Nigel Amidas, the same relationship as to a Kavah Chaymer and the Binyan Av. Mamish, there's a parallel relationship between Hekish and Zerah Shava and between Kavah Chaymer and Binyan Av. Exactly the same thing. Yeah, question.
I don't, Rabbi Schwartz has said a couple of times you'll come back to Gezer Shava with a Pircha on it. But if a Gezer Shava defeats logic, then how can you attack it with logic? If you can attack it with logic, then why could somebody make it
so,
in the first place?
So let me go actually, there's a machloikis had learned this Gemara between Rabbeinu Kreskas and the Ritva. I'm in the Ritva now. Actually, this is my Shitas Rashi, but I'm looking at the Ritva, it's nicer and it's better print. Anyway, the Ritva in the Malafon Bedbeis learns. The Ritva says, I'm on the in the Masada Rav Kook, I'm on Malfut Beis. It says Chidushim Miksav Yad. It's Kalam Simin Kalam Shin Tezayin. I'm the Kesef V'Yakol Kona Lema Makarif Legay. The Rebbe saw that Kesha Adif Ramu Samek Zira Adif Alod Kol Amak Zira Adif Shanach Adi Ikel Mifrach. So the Ritva says, interesting enough, is the Mufne Mitzad Echad V'Lamedin U'Meshiva. It turns out there's a sugya in several places in Shas, on the bottom of about Chama Kuvil B'Chafayim Beis. That's the Shivish place where people know it, but also at the end of the, right, in several places. The question is, the two words of the Chal V'Chaymel, right, are they needed in the Pasuk or the extra? Does the Machlok Zabit to Rabbi Kiv Chachamim? In other words, to what extent do the words of the Chal V'Chaymel have to be extra? It's called Mufne.
Gezeirah Shavah.
I'm sorry, Gezeirah Shavah, right. So it's interesting that what's the machlekes here? In other words, according to Rebbe, Rebbe says if it's only muft mitzad echad, evidently this gezeirah shavah against law is only muft mitzad echad. It's muft mitzad echad, so you could be mafich it. In other words, the question is how linguistic is the Kal V'Chaymer? Mm-hmm. In other words, a Kal V'Chaymer can be super linguistic. Tatlitivusa, meaning what? Or tatlitivusa, depends whether you want to use hekesh, you want to use linguistics. If both words are, let's say, mufne, that means both words of the Kal V'Chaymer, both words of the Gezeirah Shavah are mufne, they're extra. That's called tatlitivusa. That's, forget it. You've sealed it. But if only one word is mufne, extra, right? So there's a machlokes. But there's a shita that something which is mufne, only mitzad echad, right, you could learn from it. You could learn a Kal V'Chaymer. You could learn the same from it, but you could ask a Pircha. So in other words, basically, a Kal V'Chaymer comes in different colors. In other words, a Kal V'Chaymer can be super linguistic, can be semi-linguistic, and can be not linguistic whatsoever. Some Kal V'Chaymers, in other words, every time I say Kal V'Chaymer is getting a Shabbat, in other words, for example, you have all different types of Gezeirah Shabbat. Let me give you an example off the top of my head right now, right? In other words, for example, here in this guy's chair over here, it's Mufne Tzad Echad, so then we can make Shiva going to. But for example, There's a, the most famous Gzeirus Shavu that everybody knows from Yeshiva. Come on, Yeshiva people, now's your time, right? Kicha, kicha, Mr. Yafet. Everybody knows. Gemara Kiddushin says that how do we know that you acquire one with Kesef? Because, right? The Gemara makes the famous Gzeirus Shavu, right? Kicha, kish, isha. And and actually this week's parasha, this is Chayisar, Gevaldik, Mamish, Dovah, Be'itim, Atoiv. In other words, Hinei Kesef, Azada, Kach, B'meni, okay? That's a great Gzeirus Shavu. Comes the Ritva, asked this question too. Comes the Ritva and asks an incredible question. What type of Zikr Shavu is this? In Devarim, the kich is going on the Isha. In Bereshis, in Chayisara, the kich is going on the Kesef. What type of Zikr Shavu is this? Says the Ritva. Even though the Gemara says a Gezer HaShava, it's not really a Gezer HaShava. It's a Gilei Milsa. It's a Gilei Milsa. In other words, the Gezer HaShava is just come to tell you what he's buying the Isha with. But it's not coming really to equate things, which means, according to the Ritva, since the subject and object of the verb of the two verses, the two Pesukim, are not at all commensurable, right? So therefore, it cannot possibly be a Gezer HaShava. And basically, what the Gemara says in Shava is really what? It's really a Gilei Milsa. It's coming to take a definition. It's coming to give. It's trying to tell me I'm buying the Isha with Kesef. That's it. In other words, a Gilei Milsa means it's just coming to tell you something. But it's not in any way coming to equate two things. Because according to the metaphor, to equate two things, they have to line up grammatically. Here, they don't line up grammatically.
What would he say about the bar kol Shava kol?
What?
The Gzeirus Shavu,
That's even worse. Okay, we'll speak about this. Okay, that's an interesting. We'll speak about that. If Avraham Kreiman says the Meiri, and the Meiri says this, I think in Novakam, says the Meiri that the fact that Avraham Kreiman just means we're acquainted to Inyanim. But in other words, I mean, I'm going on this hundreds of examples. All I wanted to say is that in other words. In other words, to make a linguistic identity, that has to be a commensurable two things. Now, by the way, this is, don't think that the Ritva there's no machlokes. I think the Rashba, I think it's chalak of the Ritva, and the Tosfos is chalak of the Rashba too. I don't want to give a shiur and kiddushin here, but the fact is, there's actually a machlokes whether in fact grammatical commensurability is a condition for chal v'chaim. But in any case. And it has, and by the way, it's nafkamin is in the sugya too. We got the chalit and so I don't want to go through the entire thing. But in any case, the bottom line is, what I want to say is that a gzeira shava is not a gzeira shava is not a logical principle. However, it doesn't mean that logic is not part of it either. Because since the gzeira shava is grounded in the hekesh, there's a logical component to the linguistic principle. It's a two-dimensional space. The middas are two-dimensional. There's no such thing as a Gzeirus Shavu. It's a heckish Gzeirus Shavu. There's no such thing as a Kal V'Chomer or a Binyanav. There's a Kal V'Chomer and a Binyanav. That's the way Meir Treib is going to be saying the Shi'ulah. The middas are greater than or equal to two dimensions.
Isn't it peculiar that the logical dimension is the thing that comes by Kabbalah and the non-logical dimension is the thing that is worked out by the person themselves? You would have thought it would be the other way around.
No, because we're creating a text. On the contrary, in other words, previous generations, we trusted the way they thought. The later generations are already, in other words, the thinking is much more. The thinking is much more foggy. They need, we need text. We need. I call that. I come to be like a Yiridus Hadeiros, but that's really mamish. I actually say the Yiridus Hadeiros. That's really Yiridus Hadeiros. That has to be true anyway. The generations thinking, thinking and time are inversely related. But in any case, that's the. In other words, that's the idea. So in other words. My conclusion is that not only are these articles, in my opinion, totally missed the point of the Yigim Middas, but Baruch Hashem, they were written, they give us actually a very interesting understanding of what the Yigim Middas are, is that, in other words, when Alexander of Macedonia, Alexander of Don, came to Jerusalem, we understand that really what it means like this. In other words, in Nevuah, I don't know what Nevuah is. In Nevuah, you don't have this two-dimensionality. I don't go into Shem Nevuah. But you see, obviously in Nevuah, you don't have this clear two-dimensionality between the logical and the linguistic principles. Well, the Nevuah sort of like puts the two things together. When Alexander Matkon comes to Yerushalayim, right, already you have this bifurcation, text and mind. You know, logical principle, linguistic principle, right? So, in other words, that's a, you know, that's a consequence, I guess, of, you know, of the time and the Giloy, the revelation of Torah Shebe'ah as it took place at that time. And I think it's not only a stira to anything in Torah, I think it's a chizik for us. That the Yugimel Midas with all the fancy classical, you know, scholarship and rhetoric, right, are just really sort of like an n minus one covering of an n dimensional surface.
So did the earlier generations look at the text as a text then?
More as a text, yeah.
More as a text.
It was all together. It's together. In other words, we don't know how the early generations looked at things, but for sure, if you can imagine, right, the Beis Halevi says that Matan Torah, there was no Shem Torah Shalaf Torah Shbeal Peh. So here too.
What does that mean? There's no text or there's no Baal Peh?
Somehow the text and the... I can't even describe it. I'd have to come to the different types of mysticism, which some people are more better than I am. But somehow the clear distinction between text and interpretation, was not as... The distinction was not as clear in previous generations. And I'm not trying to even guess what it was. Because, I mean, unfortunately, we're locked into our own consciousness. What I'm saying is that's clear. That's clear. In other words, Nevuah, what is Nevuah? I mean, according to that Rambam, Nevuah is a mingling of what's called the man's rational consciousness and his imaginary consciousness, right? What is that? We have no concept of what that is. Why we have no concept of what that is? It's because, you know, either you're rational or you're irrational. Try to combine the rational and irrational. You get something which is you can't define it. So in other words, I wouldn't even attempt to understand what this was. But that I don't need. In other words, I don't need this to understand what's going on in Chazal. You know, Baruch Hashem, it says that Gemara says Daf Hem and Aleph in Baruch is that Moshe Rabbeinu was given, you know, the Gemara is given Mishnah and Gemara. That's the Mishnah and Gemara, Chazal. But this is the Pshat Chazal. But the Midas are not only logical principles, are not the Midas.
So the B'nai B'Seira, taking back to where we started the first year, the B'nai B'Seira, when they're looking at this text, and they're understanding a Hekesh, what's Hillel understanding that they're not understanding? He's relating to the text.
What Hillel does is Chori had this from Shmaya B'Avtalia, but what Hillel does is there's a freezing of the logical principle into a linguistic principle. It's a freezing. That's called the Gezeira Shava.
How does Hillel know that?
What?
How does Hillel know to do that?
That's Hillel. That's how did Rabbi know the Chabad of the Mishnah? How did Rabbi know the Mishnah? Hillel understands this is the end of an era, the beginning of a new era. And what do you do? What does Rabbi do? At the end of the Tanayim, he freezes the Tanayim. After that, it's an interpretation of it. You create a text. So how do you create a text? You take an idea and you freeze it in a text, in a canon. That's what you do. That's how you end the Tanayim. That's how you end the Gemara. That's how Hillel ended whatever was before it. It's a freezing process. I'll say Al-Pi Kabbalah. When you say Al-Pi Kabbalah, I'll say Al-Pi Kabbalah. There was the Leshem explained. Leshem. Everybody explains, but I'm using the Leshem. Whatever Shachayim explains too. If you don't like Leshem, you should like the Shachayim, please. Basically, if you have a hierarchy of worlds, so the world, let's say world N, is the neshama, no, the guf of world N becomes the neshama of world N plus one, the next world. In other words, the neshama of the higher world, I mean, the guf of the lower world, of the higher world, becomes the neshama of the next world. And so on and so forth. In other words, take concept of the worlds. I mean, the goof is text and the shaman. Otherwise, what happens is the goof of the higher world. If I'm coming, in other words, if I'm in the lower world, look at the higher world. You know what I look at? I don't look at the shaman. I look at the goof. You know what? The shaman is really the goof of the higher world.
In other words, I'm in the lower world. If I look at the higher world, I don't see a neshama, I see a guf. So here too, in other words, what happens is in this freezing process, somehow the logical principles become frozen, become attacks. But to what extent do I freeze them? That we see is certainly contingent upon a machlokes tanoim.
So the consequence of them becoming locked together is actually that now they're actually more extensively
connected. And economy, right.
Whereas if it had been up to the B'nai B'Serah, in the next door they may have been disconnected and reconnected in a different way.
Right.
But now that can't be.
Right, yeah. So that's what I want to say. So in other words, I think the major point here, and actually this is going to guide, I'm going to spend the next few shiurim on this, they're going to guide how are the midas arranged. The midas come at least in pairs. In fact, we create three-dimensional spaces, maybe even some strings. In other words, the midas come in pairs. The midas are actually, you know, like building blocks of logic and language, which come together in different combinations, and that's the genius of the system. The Greek system of rhetoric, I'm sorry, classicists, is only a one-dimensional, it's flat. The midas are multidimensional, and that really is the bottom line. So, we will finish this analysis of the midas in relationship to the scholarship from the undisclosed place of Rishon HaKodesh. Have a good week. Kol Tov.